Welcome back to HealthLink On Air, produced each week by SUNY Upstate Medical University, making the academic difference in healthcare in the Central New York community. This is your host, Tricia Torrey, every patient's advocate, and I'm joined this morning by Dr. Gregory Eastwood, my co-host in our medical ethics discussion this morning, and Dr. Sharon Brangman, geriatrician and professor of medicine from SUNY Upstate. Welcome back to both of you. We were just talking about a woman named Elizabeth who has a pacemaker and has Alzheimer's disease, cannot make decisions for herself. Her husband, Sam, has been asked to have her pacemaker replaced, and the daughter has said, whoa, not so fast. I'm not sure that's the best thing for mom. Dr. Eastwood, where do we go from here? How do we help Sam make the right decision on behalf of his wife?
Very often these decisions seem overwhelming, very complex, and you don't know where to begin. And I think what the discipline of ethics or bioethics or medical ethics allows us to do is to provide some order and an approach. And although they still are very complex, they become more manageable. So I'm going to ask Dr. Brangman to help us with this, but I will provide sort of a framework. You know, one of the things that I do is, you know, ask, what are the facts? What are all the facts that are relevant to this? We may not know all the facts in the story that you gave. What's the risk of the procedure? What's the intent of the procedure? And then sort of related to that, is the question, really, what are the issues here? What are we trying to accomplish with this procedure? And then finally, although sometimes it's the first question, who is involved in this? Of course, Elizabeth is involved and Sam are involved, but there may be other people involved. In bioethics, we call these moral players, but we don't have to think of the technical term. We can just say, who are the people affected by this decision?
And you would be talking about what, other family members?
Maybe other family members, perhaps even people in the hospital, the physician, the nurse.
Aha.
Sometimes those individuals are involved as well.
Is this something you've run into, Dr. Brangman, this type of scenario?
This is actually a very common scenario when we're trying to figure out what we do with chronic life-saving procedures in someone who seems to have a terminal illness. And certainly when you have end-stage Alzheimer's disease, you can no longer interact with the world around you, that starts to meet the criteria for end of life or the end of the disease process. So we start to think, is what we're doing going to help this person live longer? And if they live longer, are they going to live the kind of life that they wanted to live?
And, you know, that seems key to me. One of the questions in putting together this scenario was, is this a question of quality of life and who defines that quality of life?
Well, quality of life is actually a very personal decision. And there are tools to help people figure out what quality of life is, but it really comes down to your personal decision based on your upbringing, your religious background, your cultural focus. Mm-hmm. And so we all have an individual idea as to what we think is a good life to have.
Right. Is this the kind of life Elizabeth would want to lead? Is this the kind of life Sam would want to lead if he were in Elizabeth's shoes? Is that a way to do it, Dr. Eastwood?
I think it is. When Dr. Brangman talked about cultural differences, it reminded me of the difference in the way we look at things in this country and so-called Western cultures versus some other cultures. We have a very high emphasis on what's called autonomy, the individual's right to make a decision.
Mm-hmm.
Some other cultures don't ignore the individual, but they also integrate the individual into the group, into the family, so that the decision very often is a collective decision. And basically, making the decision from the point of view of the individual in relationship to other people.
Okay.
So I think we have to be sensitive to that regarding who we're working with. And
yes.
I would also editorialize a little bit. We might be able to learn something from some of these other cultures in this country.
We don't always do things 100% the way they should be done. We do them the way we do them and expect that should be
that's
the right,
right,
but that's not always necessarily true. So where do we go from here? Say the objective facts have been pulled in. Now we know that there is a procedure. Is it do we consider whether it's an invasive procedure, perhaps, versus, you know, you hear something about replacing a battery, it seems so simple, but this is an invasive procedure.
Well, you want to know how much discomfort is it going to cause, because
mm-hmm.
if the person has end-stage Alzheimer's disease, they're not going to be able to understand why they're having pain.
True.
They may need to be sedated or restrained in some way, mm-hmm. and that could cause them more agitation to have limitation of their movement.
Mm-hmm.
How long is it going to take to do the procedure? Are they going to need general anesthesia? We know that people with end-stage Alzheimer's disease don't do well with anesthesia. They may not wake up in the way that we would expect someone to wake up.
And sometimes, I understand exactly what you're saying, because sometimes the anesthesia is almost worse than the invasion of the surgery itself.
Exactly.
Interesting.
And then are we doing something that's going to keep the heart beating, be longer than its natural span? And this pacemaker was originally implanted 10 years ago. We have an assumption that this pacemaker could last another 10 years. And how would this patient look in another 10 years? Would she be in a position much different from where she is now?
In other words, you can't really improve her life. So are you improving it by keeping her at the same place?
Right.
You know, at best.
And then we have to look at the husband's needs. You know, is he ready to make this kind of decision? And Alzheimer's disease is a very long disease. It can span 10, 15 or more years. And the caregiver is just as much involved in the disease process as the patient.
Well, true. And we have to ask the question, is the caregiver dealing with some of his own medical needs? Mm-hmm. Is this something you run into, Dr. Eastwood, when you're looking at the other person as well? But what about other family members, too?
Well, that is certainly very important. And I think this sort of keys off of what I said earlier, that we tend to have a focus on the patient or the individual and tend to ignore, or at least to relegate to secondary status, other people involved. And the caregiver is extremely important in something like this. And if you have one caregiver, it's less complicated. If you have two or three or four other either caregivers or family members, becomes even more complicated. This raises the whole issue of families getting together in advance before any emergency happens or any decision has to be made and having open, frank discussions about these things. That's ideal, and we would encourage everybody to do that and try to come to some consensus. That's mm-hmm. the other important thing.
And you don't have to all agree, but you have to understand what the other individuals prefer for themselves.
Ideally, it'd be nice if everyone agreed.
Yeah.
But at least by having this discussion and identifying disagreements, you mm-hmm. know about those in advance, and mm-hmm. maybe you can think about how you might address them.
But you know, sometimes, oh, go ahead.
Well, and then write it down. You know,
a healthcare
proxy is an example of this, or just a note that says what transpired in this discussion.
One of the points I think we need to make, though, is you might tell what your desires are. But I know I have a friend who her mother said, don't ever put me in a nursing home. And she promised her mother she'd never put her in a nursing home. And now she is really stuck. She feels like she's between a rock and a hard place because she can't take care of her mother. Is this something you run into, Dr.
Brennan?
We deal
with this all the time. And families feel very guilty because they made promises that they now can't keep for very legitimate reasons. And so we have to help families work through this and work on feeling less guilty and forgiving themselves for doing something that's really in the best interest of their loved one.
You know, you use the word guilt, and I think that's a huge part of this. Mm-hmm. I think it's a huge part of it. I am sure that Sam, kind of in his heart, knows that it's probably the right thing, perhaps not to choose or to choose, but he feels guilty if he does or doesn't choose the other one. And why does he feel that guilt? Does he feel it from Elizabeth? Does he feel it from his family members? That's a lot of it, isn't it?
It's a very complex emotion. And we all want to do the best for our loved ones. And
Absolutely.
Sometimes the best is not doing something. And that's a very hard decision. I also think that we are all kind of swamped by information we get from the media and from television that sends us unrealistic messages and expectations that really aren't met in real life. We can see a television show where somebody gets a life-saving treatment and 10 seconds later they're up and walking around and resuming a normal life. And
so,
in reality, that doesn't happen.
That's very true. And I think that says then that what we have to do is make sure that our expectations, and that goes back to what you were saying, Dr. Eastwood, is that when you talk about the facts, one of those facts has to be what the realistic expectations are.
Yes. I think that's a function of the physician or the nurse or somebody who is knowledgeable. And earlier in the show, we talked about ethics consultations. That is a definite function of an ethics consultation. What an ethics consultation often does is convene the so-called moral players, all the people who are involved, and talk these things out.
And those are people they can find if a patient's in the nursing home or in a hospital or some of the other facilities that are around?
These are people, of course, the patient, the caregiver, the loved one, the physician, maybe the nurse, maybe the social worker, maybe even the secretary on the floor.
Wow. Well, you know what? I think we've set the bar very high for the first of our medical ethics discussions. I want to thank you both, Dr. Eastwood and Dr. Brangman, for joining us this morning to do this. Listeners, during the next segment of the show, we're going to give you an address to send letters to if you prefer, or an email address or a phone number to call. You may want to share your stories with us. You may want to ask some questions or suggest some future topics for our medical ethics discussion. Thanks so much to both of you.
Thank you.
Welcome.
And listeners, we are going to take a break now. We'll be back in just a few moments. This is SUNY Upstate's HealthLink on air on 570 WSYR.